Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, April 24th, 2019. Some residents of Juba Town express fear over the formation of a new government next month.
I feel like the same incident that happened will still happen with the misunderstanding, mostly during the security organs, because every year comes with his, and still they find the ones for the government, the soldiers you get. So this still, that small fighting will still occur.
And police officers are asking parents in Juba to watch over their children.
They should not just move anyhow to go and join the other group. Who can be actually educate them to drink some alcohol and make any other multi-practices in the street? So they will be considered as a criminal.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese have mixed reactions to a proposal by President Salva Kiir to form a transitional government of national unity next month. Some residents of Juba express fear that forming the government before implementing all security arrangements stipulated in the September 12 peace agreement could result into a repeat of the July 2016 scenario where fighting erupted in Juba between government and rebel forces. Onen Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Juba.
While the Kiir administration wants the parties to form a unity government by May 12, as stipulated in the peace agreement, SPLA-IO leader Riek Machar wants to delay it for 6 months to allow time to implement all security arrangements. South Sudanese singer Nyamburu Kenyi says when the parties signed last year's revitalized peace deal, he expected those arrangements to be implemented during the pre-transitional period, which is now. Kenyi says he does not understand what's causing the delay in cantoning, training and unifying the various forces as required by the agreement. Kenyi says both President Kiir and Machar should tell citizens where their unified forces are located before they decide to form the new government.
It will not look good because it will like now maybe government is violating whatever the agreement was already done. And it should be the both side who's agreeing on something that they have written down. They have to respect it, and we are all citizens, we are also willing that we should be in the feast.
Kenyi says he worries that Machar's request for a six-month delay will negatively impact the peace agreement. A 51-year-old woman who prefers to be identified only with her surname, Juan, for safety reasons, says both Kiir and Machar have not been telling the truth when it comes to implementing the security arrangements. Speaking in Arabic, Juan says she fears that if a unity government is formed before implementing all security arrangements, it will not hold.
As the forces are staying separately like that, so how will the peace come? This shows that there is no truth. They should assemble all their forces in one place. We, the ordinary citizens, also need peace to return to the country.
22-year-old Mabil Moses, who hails from Jonglei State, says he would love to see the parties form a transitional government of national unity by May 12, but doesn't feel safe so long as the government and the opposition continue to control their forces separately.
I feel like the same incident that happened will still happen with the misunderstanding, mostly during the security organs, because every year comes with his, and still they find the ones for the government, the soldiers you get. So this still, that small fighting will still occur. So it first needs real arrangement, as this guy stated.
16-year-old Benjamin Fodumula, a senior 2 student at St. Joseph Secondary School, who hails from a mighty state, says unless the parties work together to fast-track security arrangements, army generals from the various groups will jockey for positions in the unity government, something he says will likely kick off new fighting in Juba.
The IO, SPLM group, and Salva Kiir, and the SPLA forces should be combined together. Then let them form the new government. Because if the government is formed before the secret arrangement, then some of the people which are going to form the new party, then for government, they have their forces. Then they will say, that's why my leader is not in this position. That's why it can cause another conflict.
Several other issues are supposed to be resolved before the transitional government is formed in May, such as determining the number of states and their boundaries, and creating a constitution, none of which has been accomplished. For VOA News, I am Monan Walter Solomon in Juba.
South Sudan Police Chief is telling parents in the capital Juba to take care of their children and prevent teenagers from getting involved in criminal activities. The Inspector General of Police says security agencies are concerned that certain groups of young South Sudanese are increasingly engaged in fighting, creating instability in Juba town. Wake Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Inspector General of Police General Majak Akech called a press conference in Juba to say that there are gangs of youth composed mostly of teenagers who regularly drink alcohol, fight among themselves, and sometimes even kill one another. He says the gang members often move in groups armed with machetes, knives, pangas, and other weapons. Akech says following a meeting with the various security agencies, officials in Juba agreed that the youth gangs have become a security threat and must be dealt with.
We are not talking of only discipline to your children, also control of your children. So whenever you discipline your kids, and then you also control, they should not just move anyhow to go and join the other group, who can be actually educate them to drink some alcohol and make any other multi-practices in the street. So they will be considered as criminals.
Akech says from now on, police officers will consider any youth involved in gangs as criminal suspects.
And we don't want to condone this to happen in Juba. It will later on result to something else that can be a bigger thing. But it is not a major threat, but it is growing something that will lead into a security that will cost the price for us to pay as organized forces in Juba.
Akech says 4 days ago, police arrested 34 youth, including 8 girls in Juba, involved in criminal activities such as fighting and killing. He says most of them were children aged around 12 years. Juba parent Sebit Fraser says he has heard several stories about children joining a gang commonly referred to by the N-word in Munuki and Gudele residential areas. Speaking in Arabic, Fraser says he believes some parents whose children have joined the youth gangs are negligent about disciplining their children.
The parents must talk to their children at home so that they are not indulged into gang groups. They should also enroll their children into school and should not leave their children to wander anyhow in the town so that they don't get peer groups that influence them into gang groups.
Fraser says the government also needs to play a role in thwarting gang activities, such as creating alternative programs that would keep youth productive. Akech says one of the issues the security committee discussed is the problem of vehicles with tinted glasses. He says anybody possessing a vehicle with tinted glasses should go to the traffic police office and register it, and any officer who demands money for the registration is violating his duties as an officer.
That one it is free of charge. Registration will be free of charge, provided that whenever you have a valid a logbook, and you have your own valid number plate. Duration has not yet been over. And you have also a valid license for the driver who has been using the car. So there will be no any other fee that will be asked because of your tinted glasses. No, it will be registration free of charge.
Akech says the Ministry of Interior had already given directives to the Department of Customs not to allow tinted vehicles to enter South Sudan. He says companies importing tinted glass vehicles and materials for making tinted glass on automobiles are prohibited from doing so. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Egypt, where Egypt's National Electoral Commission says the country's three-day referendum approved changes to the constitution that would extend presidential terms from 4 to 6 years and allow incumbent President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to run for office once more when his current term ends in 2024. The commission indicated that 44% of Egypt's 62 million registered voters cast a ballot, as Yediot Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The audience clapped in approval as Egypt's National Electoral Commission head Judge Lachin Ibrahim Suleiman Lachin read the results of the country's three-day constitutional referendum, which amended the constitution to extend President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's current term from 4 to 6 years and to allow him to run again in 2024. A large percentage of voters approved the constitutional changes, according to Judge Lachin. He says that 27 million voters out of 62 million eligible voters turned out to vote, or 44% of those eligible voters. 88% of those who cast valid ballots, he stresses, approved the constitutional changes. The judge saluted Egypt's body politic, thanking those who turned out to vote, including the country's women and people with special needs. He also stressed that democracy must be built from within the country and not imposed by forces from abroad. Judge Lachin noted that the constitutional changes will allow certain sectors of society, including women, Christians, and farmers, among others, stronger representation in parliament, which will now be expanded to an upper and parliament, which will now be expanded to an upper and a lower chamber. Each of Egypt's five presidents since the fall of the monarchy in 1952 has held at least one referendum. The most recent referendum took place during the brief term of former Islamist President Mohamed Morsi, who was ousted by the military during a popular revolt in 2013. Opponents of the constitutional changes complained about their inability to mobilize voters to support their cause, while opponents of the government based outside the country, including the now outlawed Muslim Brotherhood, termed the referendum null and void. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Egypt's National Electoral Authority says more than 88% of voters approved the amendments. Pro-government media, business people, and lawmakers had pushed for a yes vote. Authorities had threatened to fine anyone boycotting the poll. Mohamed Anwar Sadat, president of the Reform and Development Party, describes the aftermath of the referendum.
We were expecting that the final vote will be yes, although we believe that this turnout is somehow not correct in spite of all this mobilizations and all those incentives which have been offered to many people, which we all have been witnessing. But again, in my opinion, the regime and the president, they should somehow think twice about all those invalid votes and also those votes who have said no, which is in total about 4 million. They have to understand that they have to listen to those people and to start a dialogue, to open up the political sphere and to open up freedom of expression, freedom of speech. A lot of things has to be done following the outcome of the referendum, you know.
But your party joined the civil democratic movement in rejecting the amendments as another step toward restoring authoritarian rule 8 years after a pro-democracy uprising that toppled autocratic President Hosni Mubarak. How would the amendments restore an authoritarian regime in Egypt?
This referendum and all these amendments, articles in the constitutions, bring back Egypt to square one, which we all thought that as from 2011 we will witness a peaceful transfer of power where we can see a president who will only last 2 terms, as it was indicated, 4 years each. The way we see it now is it's not happening. They have been extending for the current president another 2 years, and they also give him a chance to run for a 3rd time, which is totally unacceptable. Moreover, the way we see more grab of power for the president on the judiciary, the military also being the guardians, being the protector of the civic life and political and constitution, the army is not a part of the political scene, and the army is not a political party. And giving the army the right to have veto in any elected civil president, this is something very risky. But again, the referendum is not the end of the story. There is more things to come. We are expecting to have an upper chamber, which is the Senate. So we have, as political parties, we have to think about how to run, how to get engaged in this coming Senate, and also the House of Representatives election, which will take place also in 2020. So this is not the end, although in general, we are not happy with what happened, and we have to think of tomorrow.
Thinking about tomorrow, what should the weak opposition do to avoid the mistakes that led to a parliament composed of mostly loyalist parties to the president?
They have to get together. They have to be more united. They have to be engaged with people. But of course, being engaged with people to recruit more and to have more participation on what is really happening in their daily life, it's not an easy thing, but we have to keep on pushing. And we have also to see from the regime, from the government, more access to the media, whether it's national media or private or independent. There has to be more access to all those who have different opinions, who have different positions, which is not happening nowadays in Egypt. So hopefully that the regime will realize the fact is that they cannot keep on shutting down everything from civil society to making life difficult to political parties, even to journalists or media representatives. I mean, they should somehow understand that they cannot continue the way they have been during the last couple of years.
That was Mohamed Anwar Sadat, the president of the Reform and Development Party, speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohamed Al-Ashanawi. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese protesters call for a massive protest tomorrow. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how is the birth of a child celebrated in your culture?
When we give birth in our culture, they simply take a baby somewhere there inside the house. They gather together as a family. They bring pots of milk. They slaughter goats. So they dance. That's how we easily celebrate.
I understand in a very simple way that when a baby boy is born, it is celebrated for the first 3 days with some local drinks, some local beverages, something of that kind.
They give them cows. Yeah, once you give birth to a baby, they give him or her cattle. So that's the way how they celebrate it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's protest leaders have called for 1 million people to march on Thursday to demand the military to give power to a civilian government. The call came after the head of the Sudan's Transitional Military Council said it would hand over power within days if civilian groups can agree on who will be in the new government. Naba Mohyadin reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudan's main protest group, the Sudanese Professionals Association, has called for 1 million people to take the streets on Thursday. The head of Sudan's Congress Party, which has backed the SPA in the recent protest, said the demonstrators will not accept military rule. He said, yes, they have escalatory measures. They are ready for a 1 million-person march and preparing for a nationwide political strike. they will not give up the people's demand for a civilian government. On Tuesday, Sudan's army chief and head of the Transitional Military Council, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah Abdurrahman Borhan, said the military would turn over power to civilians within days if the protest groups agree on the composition of a new government. Borhan made the comments during an interview with the BBC's Hard Talk program when he underscored that Sudan's troops will not attack protesters who have been camped around military headquarters since April 6. But protesters dispute Borhan's characterization that a consensus has not been reached. Protester Waddah Saleh said could be done within 1 month if the opposition parties make a united government. The list of civilian members of government has been submitted, he says. So the ball is in the military council's court, and they should accept it within a month. The military ousted President Omar al-Bashir on April 11, after 3 decades in power and 4 months of anti-government protests. But protesters have continued their sit-in, demanding civilian rule, and not the military's announced two-year transition. Protesters Amjad Nimir say the transition period is too long and they consider stalling by the military council to not hand over power to a civilian government immediately. Sudan's military is under international pressure to move more quickly to civilian rule. On Tuesday, the African Union gave the military a new 3-month deadline to hand over power or have Sudan's membership suspended. The bloc had earlier given the military 15 days. The visiting U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of the State of African Affairs, Makele James, met separately Tuesday with the members of the military council and protest leaders. They discussed what the State Department has called the Sudanese people's legitimate demands for an inclusive civilian-led transition. The U.S. has said there will be no talks on lifting U.S. sanctions on Sudan for sponsoring terrorism until the military hands over power to a civilian administration. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Angola, where Luanda, the province, which is home of the nation's capital, is surrounded by water, just like Juba Town. But many of its inhabitants still don't have access to clean water. As Elizabeth Casimiro reports from Luanda, while Angolan authorities work to improve access to potable water, delivery services are cashing in.
Angola's Luanda province, home of the nation's capital, is surrounded by water. But clean water is not available for many of its residents. As Elizabeth Casimiro reports from Luanda, while Angolan authorities work to improve access to potable water, delivery services are cashing in. Luanda province is surrounded on three sides by water, the Bengo and Kwanza rivers and the Atlantic Ocean. But only half of its 8 million inhabitants have access to clean running water. Informal car washers like Arminio Shitembo have no choice but to use untreated sewage water to earn a living. He says they do this business because of hunger. They need to make ends meet. They are unemployed. That is why they're here. The United Nations Children's Agency says nationwide, 44% of Angolans still do not have access to clean water. UNICEF's deputy representative, Patricia Portela de Souza, says a lack of access to safe drinking water, sanitation, and hygiene are the main causes of infectious diseases.
It means that people are in danger because not having access to safe water equals the likelihood to get disease, increase morbidity, and many times mortality.
But the lack of clean water is also an opportunity for hundreds of drinking water delivery boys. They say people need this water because in the neighborhood where they sell it, there is no water whatsoever. There are taps, but they have never had running water. The public water company of Luanda, EPAL, admits there is a serious water shortage. EPAL spokesperson Vladimir Bernardo says Luanda's water company has an average production level of 540,000 cubic meters of water per day, while the daily need is over a million cubic meters. Luanda's water company says financial issues have slowed progress, but production projects in the works will eventually improve access to clean water. Meanwhile, Angolans do their best to get by, using what dirty water they have or the clean water they can sell. Elizabeth Casimiro for VOA News, Luanda.
U.S. President Donald Trump consulted yesterday with the top executive of Twitter a few hours after complaining about how the social media platform treats him unfairly. VOA's Steve Harmon reports from Washington.
Twitter Chief Executive Officer Jack Dorsey met with Trump in the Oval Office. Their discussion occurred just hours after the president on the popular social media platform complained Twitter treats him unfairly. Trump, who has nearly 60 million Twitter followers, said he would have a lot more, except for what he claims are deliberate efforts by the company to thwart a larger online fan base. Trump later tweeted it was a great meeting about Twitter and social media in general, and he looks forward to keeping an open dialogue. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
An animal orphanage in Zimbabwe is one of the organization's leading efforts to ensure poaching and development do not wipe out wildlife of the Southern African nation. Columbus Mavunga reports from near Zimbabwe's second largest city of Bulawayo.
About an hour drive southeast of Bulawayo is a special orphanage caring for abandoned and injured animals. The Chipangali Wildlife Orphanage is home to 25 animal species, some endangered, some rescued from poachers. Vivian and Paddy Wilson established the orphanage in 1973, and a second generation now runs it. Chipangali's co-director Nikki Wilson explains what motivated her in-laws to begin rescuing wildlife.
When Chipangali was started, there was only Crow, which was in Durban, and there was the Daphne Sheldrake orphanage in Kenya. There was no other places where you could put animals that couldn't survive in the wild.
Animals are brought to Chipangali after being injured, seized or orphaned, says Wilson. Some are later released into the wild, some are not.
Some other birds will fly into power lines and then they're missing a portion of their wing and they won't be able to be released. We also get baby animals. Now, sometimes if they are reared, they get too tame and then they would just think that every human is friendly. Unfortunately, that's not the case in our world. So then they will stay here permanently. And we, as I say, utilize them for education.
The oldest resident of the orphanage is a crocodile rescued 4 decades ago from a community angry as it was eating their goats and cattle. The locals wanted to kill the crocodile, believed to be in its 90s, but at Chipangali, it was made part of the education program for visitors. Wilson shows visiting journalists a display of animal fetuses removed from mothers that died in poacher snares.
We obviously are trying to educate mainly locals, but anyone who comes to visit us here at Chipangali into the importance of Zimbabwe's wildlife heritage. Tourists wouldn't come and visit Zimbabwe if there weren't the big five like elephant, lion, buffalo, leopard, and then a rhino. So we actually are trying to tell people to look after animals.
Since its creation, Chipangali Wildlife Orphanage has rescued and released numerous animals into the nearby Matopo National Park. They include several troops of vervet monkeys and baboons, more than 30 pangolins, 5 leopards, 20 cheetahs, and various antelopes, small carnivores, and birds of prey. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Bulawayo.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We'll now leave you with the song Longonyo by Colonel Mido.
Sabi Guru shuta kide ma bodita visa mae Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulwe Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulwe
We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Longonyo, which means somebody who hates spending his money. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yakwana, ano takum lokuluku. Makalam gurus rasto biga kebir. Makalam gurus biga mabiselim nasti sika. Aba halkulu makalam gurus. Alokuluku.